The Veterans Health Administration wants to reinvent how it pays doctors. To do that, it will modernize to a data-driven system. Mark Byers is CEO of DSS Incorporated and my guest on Industry Chatter today, looking at ways data can reinvent and improve healthcare for the federal government. Mark, thank you very much for coming on the program today. You're writing about this in FCW, and we have a link to your piece at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. What are some of the biggest challenges that an agency like the VA faces when they're trying to leverage data to their advantage? Thanks for being on today, Mark.
Sure. Big challenge is to try to determine what to do with the data. They've got a mountain of data and trying to determine how to use it to be able to cut their costs, make their people more productive, increase the quality of care, all those items that are part of their charter.
And you write about all of the ways that the data will be used and all of the places, especially how huge the landscape is. And you write, it's critical for an organization to change with the times, and the times are definitely changing with respect to healthcare. And then you write about the volume-based care model. Tell me what that means and tell me how that's changing or how the potential model will change.
Well, volume-based care is based upon the numbers of patients you see, you know, the cost of treatment, and about just a volume of care given. They're changing over to what's called a value-based care, which is patient outcomes, cost of treatment, quality of treatment. The idea with the VA, everybody was trying to shift over to outpatient care, get people out of the acute care setting, keep people out of the hospital, keep them healthy. And to do that, you have to look at better ways to be able to treat those patients.
Is this as simple as a shift from an output-based way of measuring success to an outcome-based, as you just mentioned a second ago?
Well, none of it's ever simple, but you are able to identify, especially if you have a data like the VA does, has the data to look and see with thousands of, think about it, if you've got thousands of providers providing care for veterans, how do you determine who's doing a better job of doing it? I mean, you may have some outliers that do a terrific job. You may have some other outliers that do not that great of a job as far as providing care and keeping those vets out of the hospital. So along with that comes cost. So they've been able to, in the VA, to be able to store the data, look at the data, and determine, in some cases, the better drugs to use, some cases, better ways to deliver the care for veterans, trying to focus again on keeping the veterans at home and healthy.
All right. You write about the three most effective solutions and strategies and the characteristics of those, and I'd like to talk about each of them in turn. I'll start with the first one that you mentioned because it cites one of my favorite books of all time, Stephen Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and it's right out of that book. It's begin with the end in mind. How does that apply to using data for a better healthcare?
Again, if you have a tremendous amount of data available to you, where do you start? You have to be able to identify what you're trying to accomplish with the data. And take for instance, you have the second leading cost of healthcare is the imaging procedures. And if you have a way to be able to capture the information about what's the most effective procedure for some type of problem you've got, then you've got to be able to better identify what's the best way to prescribe the procedure, then you're able to use that information to be able to cut your costs. Because in case of procedures, they've shown imaging procedures nationwide, about a third of those procedures are unnecessary. So, you know, right now it's a hit or miss with the docs trying to order what they need. And if you have a way to capture the information, better look at it, look at evidence-based medicine, try to compare that to the data they've got within the facility for care, then you're able to better reduce the amount of unnecessary procedures.
And the second one is work in real time to make the work easier. And you write, this is based on a presentation that Dr. Robert Jesse, the Principal Deputy Undersecretary for Health at VA, made. And tell me about those two guiding principles for using big data that he outlined.
Well, the first is just acquire all the data you need and to manage patients during the actual treatment. So what that means is you want to be able to, when you see the patient, you want to have what you need to treat that patient in front of you when you see them. You want to follow up with the patient and try to contact them later because you discovered something about them that would cause you to change the way you're going to treat them. And the second way would be to that whatever you do, using the data and try to present that data to the provider, you need to make it in a way that makes the work easier for the provider. That's one of the biggest challenges we have developing computer software today, is that most of the time when you put things in front of a doctor, a nurse, whoever it is providing the care for the patient, it takes time to use it. So you've got to be able to do it in a way to try to neutralize the time or maybe reduce the amount of time that they've got to spend trying to work with the data as opposed to being working with the patient.
And you write, solutions are becoming widely available that enable clinicians to collect patient data in real time through the course of treatment. I guess the challenge, since that's the case, is formatics and how you put that in a way that the next healthcare provider, even if he or she maybe isn't connected to the same system, can access that information. Is that a fair observation, do you think?
Sure. In a lot of cases, you have different providers have to review the work of someone. Like, say chemotherapy. A lot of cases, they'll be, because of what chemotherapy is, when they administer it to a patient, how deadly it is potentially, they have different people review it. Different oncologists review the same work. So, and they'll have different people try to review it, and you want to be able to make sure you communicate back to the second person who reviews it, or the third, what the original outcome was. So the original provider, what they decided to do as far as treatment. So that's one of the things you've got to do with it. Make it available, transfer that information throughout the medical facility or even outside the facility to people providing care. For instance, you have a dental system we had developed. When the VA first originally started providing, we pushed with the VA to develop a system for them. It would take them 18 minutes to go ahead and do all the documentation for a patient, a dental patient. They had to get into three different computer systems to make it happen. And we were able to knock that down to 3 minutes initially, then down to a minute and a half. So you're able to span different computer systems, different stores of data, and then make it available for the single clinician trying to work with that patient.
And that
it's very important.
That idea also meshes with the third item that you write about in this piece, which we have a link to at federalnewsradio.com. It's written by Mark Byers, president and CEO of DSS, and that's fostering interoperability. Now, there's been a lot of focus on interoperability, not just within VA, but in between VA and the Department of Defense. That's a separate issue. But you write, solution interoperability is emerging as a third major characteristic of successful healthcare delivery in the private, public, and federal sectors, and not just between or among facilities. What are other aspects of interoperability that are becoming more and more important and more and more noticed that people are paying attention to?
Well, for instance, like I said, the dental system, you have, especially with the VA, they've got older patients, and those vets that come in and receive dental care, they need to, the dentist may want to look at the medical record for the patient. So you have to go beyond dentistry into the medical side of it, and you need to have access to that medical record for the patient while you're trying to treat them for whatever dental work you're doing for them. And that's the case where you're trying to look at the entire medical record for a patient, not just the dental record. And there's others like that. Again, you have radiology, you have some others. So you want to be able to surgery. When you pull in, look at for surgery for a patient, you're actively trying to operate on a patient. You want to see the entire record for a patient that's pertinent to that surgery you're doing for the patient. So it's not just the area where they're trying to actually do some kind of provide care for a veteran.
Mark, why is this kind of change necessary now? What is happening in the data realm or in the budget realm or in the healthcare realm that makes this change that you're writing about in this piece so eloquently necessary now that it can't wait?
I am 64 years old. I'm part of the baby boom generation. There's 77 million of us. We're starting to hit the system right now. And the cost of Medicare, Medicaid, but especially Medicare, and the cost of medicine for my generation is going to skyrocket. I mean, if you think about the cost of what I've read, the cost of treating a patient over their lifetime with Medicare is more than what they'll spend on Social Security. So you think about that in terms of 77 million people. That's a huge number. And there's no way the country can survive that unless we somehow are able to cut the cost of care. Keep people healthy, keep them out of the acute care setting, keep them at home, and treat them in the most effective manner. And that's one thing you can do with big data. You can look at this thing and say, well, what's the best way to treat a patient on the average? I've got asthma, so what's the best kind of medications you can use for asthma, the best treatments for asthma, and try to put it across the board. And there may be some variation between patients. People have differences, but on the whole, you can have a pretty good idea, especially in the year 2015, to be able to identify what the best type of care is for most illnesses. So that's what they're trying to do right now. We've got to do it. If we don't do it, the deficit we've got today and the debt we have is going to be overwhelming us.